Welcome, everybody, to the second episode of Peach State Prospects, a podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves minor league farm system. Once again, my name is Gaurav, and I am one of your hosts on this show. Joining me today is Garrett, also known as Braves MILB on Twitter. Garrett, how are you doing today?
I am doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Excited to talk about all things Hurst and Waldrop and, kind of dive into some of these players. It's going to be a fun series. Our agenda for today is to go over the players of the week for last week. And then, like I said, we're going to follow that with a pair of player profiles, including Hurston Waldrop and Kevin Kilpatrick Jr. of the Rome Emperors. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get this party started with our players of the week. Starting with Gwinnett, our first player of the week goes to Luis Liberato, an outfielder. He collected a 976 OPS over 5 games last week. It was tough sledding for Gwinnett, offensively, but Luis really stood out from the rest of the pack. On the mound was Dylan Dodd, who made one start, 7 masterful innings overall against the Norfolk Tide. Once again, that team from the Baltimore Orioles and studded with tons of really highly rated prospects. So in that start, he struck out 7, allowed just one earned run, and gave up just one walk. Just outstanding stuff from Dylan. Over in Mississippi, we have Tyler Tolv taking home the position player of the week. He was absolutely smashing the ball with a 944 OPS in 5 games. Tyler had 6 hits, 5 of which were extra base hits, including 2 homers. On the other side of the ball, Hayden Harris took it for the pitchers as he appeared at 2 games and struck out 5 over 3 innings, which is good enough for a 15 K per nine while allowing just one runner on base via a single. Now we head down to Rome, where Adam Zabrowski took it for the position players. He got a hit in 5 of the 6 games he appeared in. However, he did get on base in all 6 games and had a fantastic 980 OPS. For the pitchers, I mean, what do you expect? It went back to Owen Murphy. I kind of feel bad for Spencer and company, but Owen Murphy had one start, and it was probably one of the best starts of the entire season. And when I say the entire season, I'm not talking about Rome. I mean the entire organization, including Atlanta. Owen was overpowering. He struck out 10 hitters over 7 innings and allowed just one hit. I believe it was a single triple to start off an inning and then shut down the team for the rest. For the season, Owen now has a 1.50 ERA, a 2.3 walk per nine rate while striking out 14 per nine. Just a fantastic start. Now we head over to Augusta, where Drew Compton might just be the hottest hitter in the entire organization, including the majors. He appeared in 4 games, but hit .643. He got on base at a .706 clip, and he slugged 1,000. So, all in all, a 1.706 OPS for the week for Drew Compton. And I think it's fair to say that former Yellow Jacket is pretty much ready to head over to Rome. As for the pitchers, it's Riley Frey who takes home pitcher of the week. Riley took home the win on the 21st, where he struck out 6 and allowed one single unearned run over 5 innings of work. Riley now improves his record to 2-0 with a 2.20 ERA, walking just 1.7 per nine and striking out 12 per nine. Some more great starts from another somewhat smaller name, but overall, a fantastic week once again for the pitching. Now that we've kind of gone over our players of the week, Garrett, did you have any specific talking points or any notes about those players I just talked about?
Yeah, I do want to jump back up to Dylan Dodd. I think one of the biggest notes from last week was his fastball velocity. He averaged 93.3 miles per hour on his fastball, which is over a mile per hour higher than he averaged in Atlanta last year. That's a big deal for him. He had regression last year, both in his command and in his fastball velocity, which is really hard to adjust to, especially making your major league debut. Having that velocity back, his command was better last game, though I do think that he's still not at the level he was in 2022 in that regard. It's definitely a good look for him. I've always been high on Dodd. I thought he was, a back end 4 or 5 type major league starter. Definitely had a rough year last year, but if you look at his numbers, he had a lot of soft contact at the AAA level. And overall, it didn't dull him all that much for me, even though it was a bad season. I'm actually curious what your opinion, I mean, do you see Dodd as a major league starter, or is this just kind of an organizational guy for you?
It's an interesting question. It really is. You know, someone of his, I'm not going to say stature, but I mean 4 to 5 pitch mix, which, you know, coming into being drafted, we thought he had pretty solid command of all of them. Early in his career, again, it was that 97, and it seemed to have disappeared, but good to hear that it has rebounded back up. Once again, we'll have to monitor that and see if it's something that he can hold now consistently through an entire season. In terms of his overall placement, you know, it does look as though the Braves value him just one step behind a couple of the other pitchers. You know, you have AJ Smith-Shawver probably at the top of their list. After that, you have your Darius Vines and Allen Winans. You know, serviceable major league pitchers don't really have the flashy stuff, but when you throw them out there, they can hold themselves, you know, they can do well on the mound itself. Dylan Dodd, kind of imagine he has a higher ceiling than those two. But he hasn't really put it all together at the same time at the major league level. His performance in the majors the last couple of years, I just think he's a little further down in that depth chart, which makes it a little more of a struggle for him to, again, jump over those two. So right now, I know it's tough to say, but I see him more as organizational depth unless we see an injury happen. Or he could be, if he continues to show this promise right now, he could be a very, very interesting trade chip. Again, that's, you know, four pitch mix, high velocity, good spin. Like you like what he could possibly do. He could be someone that makes a lot of sense for another team.
Oh, I mean, I definitely appreciate the perspective. I mean, because I've always been a guy that's high on Dodd, I tend to be a little flowery with him, and I like to see more realistic perspectives from guys. So I appreciate hearing, your perspective on that. And I do tend to agree, like I would favor just because of the both of them being at their peak with command, I would probably favor Winans and Vines over him at this current moment. The long term, I don't know if either can really stick in rotation.
I do agree with that as well. And then to add on top of that, long term, I still believe Dodd has that better arsenal and is more capable of having a bigger impact at the major league level. All right. Well, thanks for that, Garrett. Now we're going to change gears and start our official player spotlight series. First up is none other than the Braves, I think, overall number two prospect, maybe number three with the ascension of Owen Murphy. A lot to talk about there, but we're not going to dive into that. But we're going to talk about Hurston Waldrop. Now, to give you all a little backstory, Hurston was, I would say, a bit of a surprise draft pick for the Braves, but in a really good way. It was almost unexpected that a player of his caliber would actually be available at 24. So when he was, and the Braves called him up and made him that pick, a lot of people were just like, okay, how did this really happen? How did Hurston go drop all the way to 24 to an organization known for pitching? Well, we don't have to talk about that. We can just be thankful that he's here and pitching for Atlanta. In his final year at the University of Florida, Hurston helped propel the Gators to the College World Series final. Of course, that didn't end too well with that mammoth LSU team, but them making it there had a lot to do with Hurston. He pitched a, you know, I would say a quite sizable 101 innings for a college arm. He struck out nearly 14 a game. That splitter was just unfair against college hitting while walking. The main thing was he was walking almost 5 per 9. So that's maybe a reason that he fell a bit. Maybe that hurt his draft evaluation. It was never the actual pitch mix or the quality of pitches, but it could have perhaps been that command. He was drafted with the Braves with the number 24 pick and signed for $3 million. Upon being drafted, Hurston came out, I would say, guns a blazing. He started in low A Augusta and worked his way all the way to Triple A Gwinnett in a single season. Again, after pitching 101 innings at the college level, that's a big workload on a college arm. So seeing him continue to find that velocity over an entire season where he's hitting his most innings pitched he ever has and still being able to hold 97 to 99, like that shows a lot again about his overall stamina, what he can do on the mound. And again, that pitch mix is absolutely lethal. On the season in 2023, he made 8 starts, had a 1.53 ERA, a near 13 strikeouts per nine. But once again, that walk rate was nearly 5. Now, Garrett, now that we've got that profile down, we get a little more about his biography. Why don't you break down Hurston for us? What is his pitch selection, and how do you grade each pitch of his?
Yeah, I want to go back just quickly to the draft. It's kind of interesting. There was a lot of variation in opinions on him. Eric Langenhagen, for example, the Fangraphs rated him as the sixth best prospect in the draft, and it seems like he is closer because basically everybody has Waldrip as a top 100 guy now. But it was a weak class for pitching, so it was hard for a lot of people to really place where Waldrip fit in that among, outside of Paul Skeens, college pitching, there wasn't a bevy of talent there. And so Waldrip falling to 24 was definitely surprising, but I'm not sure if he would have gone with his command issues. I'm not sure if in a year with a more typical influx of college pitching, I'm not sure that he would have gone much higher than that. Though overall, it seems that the Braves made the right choice because his arrow has been up pretty much ever since. Pitch wise, he's working with the three pitch mix. Fastball this year, he's really been averaging a little over 94, though we've seen him up to 99. We saw him up to 99 in college. It seems like they've backed off that velocity a little bit, and it seems like they're doing that intentionally with the, idea of they're making tweaks to his mechanics. They're working on his command and making sure he can locate his pitches. So they're backing off the fastball velocity a little bit. We kind of actually saw that, we mentioned him earlier, AJ Smith-Shawver. We saw similar with him where they kind of backed his velocity back a little bit and ramped it back up. So I think we'll see. It doesn't seem like it's anything concerning. I think we'll see that velocity tick back up as they get more comfortable with his fastball command. But, his fastball for me, it has the potential to be a plus pitch. He has the velocity, he has the movement with it. It's just the command is so bad at this point. It really plays down and acts more like an average fastball. So that's going to be a real focus for him. But both of his secondary pitches, rather, are fantastic. His slider can be up to 3,000 RPMs. He threw one in the 90s the other day, which, if you see a 91 mile per hour slider at 3,000 RPM, just go sit down. It's over. And that's exactly what the batter did. He swung right through it and went back to the dugout. And so that's a pitch that could also be a plus, maybe even a 65 pitch. But everybody agrees that his splitter is the best pitch that he throws, probably the best pitch in the Braves minor league system, though, there are a couple guys that can get it up there at 102. That's a pretty effective pitch. But, if we're talking secondaries, it's pretty easily the best secondary in the system and one of the better ones in the minor leagues. I know MLB Pipeline named him as the best other pitch in terms of when they did their best tools, fastball, changeup, slider, other. The best other pitch was Hurston Waldrop's splitter, and it's a fantastic pitch. I mean, in the low thousands on the spin rate, and just it falls off the table, and he dominates with the pitch. It's an easy, double plus 70 type pitch that he can use it against right-handed pitch batters. He can use it against left-handed batters. He can get strikeouts with that pitch in any count. He's confident with that pitch, and it's one of the better pitches we've seen from any player. So for him, that's like, having a pitch that good usually makes you a major league player. Like, you can get, even in a bullpen role, you can get to the major leagues with a pitch that good, and you add in two other, above average to plus pitches. It's a great arsenal, and you're looking at number two, maybe even number one starter type potential from him. The command, though, is a concern. A lot of it's mechanical. He has a very active delivery, very high effort delivery, and so the concerns are, if the command never comes, does he end up in the bullpen? Does he stick as a starter? I think his stuff is good enough that even if the command doesn't come all the way, you're looking at a back end starter. And the Braves have been very active with all of their pitchers in terms of focusing on developing fastball command to mixed results. It's a very hard thing to develop, right? Like, you can teach guys typically different secondary pitches. It's very hard to teach command, especially for a guy who's 22. It's not old and it's his first year out of college, but at the same time, it's easier to get an 18-year-old and teach him command than a 22-year-old. And so it's a definitely an uphill battle for him to get to command. But if it's even slightly below average command, right now it's terrible. Like, his command's really bad, and he has good games, he has bad games. His last game in particular was a very bad game. He couldn't put anything where he wanted it, but it's very bad command. If he can get it to below average command, you're easily looking at a mid rotation type starter, and he's a clear top 100 prospect type for me. I kind of consider him in kind of that 60 to 70 kind of range. I don't know if necessarily, I know Baseball American has him at, I believe, 46. I know it's in the top 50. Smith-Shawver's at 42, so they rate them very closely. Some people have Waldrop a little bit lower in the 70s. I tend to agree with that just because I'm not as high on the command and I don't want to overreact to, his first professional season where he did fantastic. He was great last year, but it is his first professional season. It's kind of the end of the year where a lot of guys are tired, and I don't want to draw too many conclusions from that and artificially boost him. So for me, he's kind of in that 60 to 70 range, but that still makes him, in my opinion, the clear second best prospect in the system and a guy that the Braves are a lot of their future in that rotation is going to be dependent on his development.
You made a lot of great points there, Garrett. I kind of want to go back to that fastball command. Without it, that fastball sits, 90, 95, 97, sometimes hits 99. When he isn't able to throw that for strikes, his splitter comes in upper 80s and his slider comes in upper 80s. So there isn't that much, really that much difference in break of velocity between those two pitches. So when you can go ahead and not even have to factor in 97 plus, like it just makes it a little easier for hitters. And then again, he's got to be able to throw those secondaries for strikes as well. So it is a very important thing for him to work on that fastball command, and something that's clearly in effect for Waldrop this year. With that mix, that's that fastball splitter slider mix. You said you had him as the clear number two. What is your view on his overall MLB potential? What do you see him today if he's able to hammer out and be that below average to maybe average fastball command? What do you see him as in the majors, and what kind of timeline do you associate that with?
Yeah, I think if he can get there command-wise, just to that point, command-wise, mid-rotation starter, I think that that's a, maybe a number four type, which, when we use number four, we're not necessarily saying the fourth best starter in an average rotation. It's used on a grading scale in terms of the value. A number four starter would be a slightly above average starter. A 3-4 would be a slightly above average type starter, which is where I would see him if that command gets to that point. There's obviously a lot of risk there, which brings him down. And then, of course, top end projections are, there's no ceiling on his top end projections. He can get pretty much anywhere he wants to if the command comes. Timeline wise, I don't think he's going to be ready this year. I just don't see it. And there's so many people above him that would get that opportunity first. He won't be in Atlanta in 2024. 2025, he'll definitely get looks in spring training, but he's not. My feeling is the Braves have no reason to rush him necessarily. Now, there are questions in the rotation next year that they're going to have to answer. And at some point during the year in 2025, I think he will get a shot. I don't know if it will be consistent. I mean, a lot of that will be due based on how he performs, but I think he'll get a shot. Few starts next year as guys get hurt. The Braves tend to use 12-ish starters in a year. So he'll be one of those 12. At some point, I think he'll get a few starts, but I don't think that he's a guy that they're going to want to rely on until 2026. And then you'll start to see if he has a good debut in 2025, you'll see them give him a longer shot in 2026. If he struggles, he may get the treatment that guys like God and Smith-Shawver did, where send him down to AAA, get them right. Let's get them back up as soon as possible. But I definitely think that if you're looking at it, they'll probably shoot to have him consistently in the rotation by 2026, and you'll probably see him in 2025. I mean, there's also the possibility that they could use him in the bullpen this year. I mean, his stuff is good enough to do that right now, but I think they're deep enough bullpen wise that barring a ridiculous run of injuries, they won't need him. But we've seen them, we saw them do it a couple of years ago with Spencer Strider, where they got him up in at the end of the year. Gave him a little taste and said, "Are you good enough to make the postseason roster?" And if Waldrop shows that, it's possible you could see him in the bullpen this year, but I just don't think it's particularly likely. Alex Anthopoulos has built such a deep bullpen, even down into the AAA level, that there's just not a need to rush Waldrop for that reason.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with you with that last point. And frankly, if I see Hurston in a potential relief role, this season for the playoffs, I'm a little concerned. That means there's been significant injury. I think the Braves also have some very intriguing relief arm options. Maybe not even the relievers in AAA, but there are, a couple of other starters. Think talked about Giancarlo quite a bit. He hasn't even pitched once this year, but that two pitch mix just makes a lot of sense in a relief role. And having someone come out, hitting 102 with that tight spinning slider that just disappears, like that's super intriguing. But the idea of Waldrop in that bullpen role, that's a little scary for me. But noted, I do agree with you with that 2026 timeline. I see a lot like AJ Smith-Shawver, where he's not on that same level as AJ this year. Right now, he's showing the Braves he's got that fastball command. But next year, he's going to come out in spring training, try and show that he's ready for that major league role. Again, in my mind, kind of like you, I don't see him making that. Instead, he's on that really short list between Gwinnett and Atlanta, where if something happens, there's an injury, Hurston's right there. Okay, let's give him a shot in a, abbreviated role, see how he does. If he's amazing, we'll keep him up there. But then if not, he's going to be a backup option. We'll have him ship him down back to Gwinnett and let him continue to work on things. And then 2026, really good timeline. I feel like if he does go down that route, he does improve that fastball command, capable of showing of throwing that slider and that splitter still. Like then 2026, let him unleash. Spring training, he's got that opportunity out the gate to get a starting rotation role. So I do agree with you there. That not all that being said, let's go ahead and dive a little deeper into Hurston. We brought up his mechanics. We brought up last week about some of the strategy that we have seen pretty much in place for him this year. It's quite prevalent that the Braves are focusing on fastball command for him. What have you seen this year and how effective has it been so far?
It's just too early to really talk about the effectiveness of it. I mean, that's something that takes so much time, especially with command. It's a road and it's about progression for him. And so, you look at the numbers, they're not good this year. Overall, his numbers are terrible this year, but it's because one of the best pitches in the minor league leagues, he's using it 7, 8 times a game. And so, we're really focused on the progression from him rather than the results. And right now, the other couple of weeks ago, he had a fantastic start. He looked like he was really commanding the ball well. This past week, he really didn't. He struggled with his mechanics. He was a little out of whack. And so, they're trying to make a lot of changes with him at once in terms of tweaking his mechanics and working on that fastball command. So it doesn't look great. Right now, one of the things that we've really seen from him is hitting that slider as well, kind of down and away from right-handed batters, down and in the left-handed batters. And he's done quite well with using that pitch and getting a lot of strikeouts out of it, especially early in the games. Where he struggles is later in the games, they tend to pick up on it better. And he tends to, when he gets tired, he misses in the zone and he gets hit hard. The fastball command is hit or miss. They're really focused on going up in the zone with the fastball. They do that with all of their pitchers. And Waldrop has the type of life on his fastball where he can live up in the zone and miss bats with it. And so both of those pitches are missing bats at a decent rate this year. Because of their overusage, his whiff rates tend to struggle later in the games because guys get so many looks at his pitches. But the process, and especially you see flashes of, even last game when he struggled, he got right for a 3-batter span and he was overwhelmingly dominant with just those two pitches. So what we're seeing from him is the ability to make it work even with those two pitches. And when he pops in the splitter every now and then, it's even better. So the ability for him to do that and show the ability to get outs with his fastball, with his slider, is going to be huge for his development and being able to get right-handed batters out consistently, not run up deep counts where they're fouling off his fastball a lot. It's all going to be about command and location for him. And right now, it's just not great. It's just that he hasn't had enough time to develop yet. But he's definitely shown some signs of where we want to see him in terms of how he's able to locate those pitches and how he's able to utilize those pitches when he locates them well.
This concept of pretty much taking away a pitcher's best pitch and having them focus on, these perceived areas of weakness have happened before. This is not something new. The Braves have employed a strategy similar to this. Who is a good example of someone where this strategy was actually successful, where they took away a player's best pitch and it ended up working out long term?
I think if you look at just the Braves rotation right now and Max Fried, when he got to Double A, he really dominated the lower minor leagues, and his best pitch was his curveball. But he was very reliant on his curveball. His changeup was a little bit underdeveloped. He had fastball command better than what Waldrop's is, so that's a big part of that. But they limited his curveball usage a lot early in the season. If you go back and look at that season, he was really bad at Double A. But Fried is the type of guy where he's constantly developing new pitches, refining pitches. And so what he was able to do was really improve the changeup, add in that slider, improve his fastball command, especially up in the zone. And now he turned into top of the rotation starter for the Braves. And even, he went down to Triple A. I mean, he was in Double A, struggled, came up in the major leagues, that year and had some success once he added back in that curveball. So being able to really develop those secondary pitches and have a full arsenal of 3 to 4 pitches that he can utilize was good for Fried, and it was important for him to not necessarily. His curveball was so good that no one could do anything with it. So if he threw it 40% of the time, he was going to get outs. And we saw that consistently with him at the lower levels. Seeing him at Double A struggle for a while and figure out how to make it work. And, Fried also had some blister issues consistently throughout his minor league career that affected his performance as well. But a lot of it was that pitch limitation and learning to survive and thrive off of other pitches allowed him to utilize all of his pitches in different situations and have the confidence to throw the slider for strikes, to throw the fastball to get outs. And he's really developed as a pitcher in that regard. And it's still an ongoing process for him. I mean, you're still hearing every spring about how he's made this tweak to this pitch, added this pitch, taken away this pitch. And so it's a constant process for a lot of guys, but having the ability to do that early and for free, showing that he can succeed with the other pitches gave a lot of confidence going forward that he was going to be able to get to the major leagues and succeed no matter what.
Minor League Max Fried was really a fun player to watch. When it was clicking, it was just like, all right, man, like go ahead and get this guy to Atlanta. He's got it all. My favorite, I think, was probably 2016 when he had, I don't know the number off the top of my head. It was like 25 or 30 pickoffs at first. So even when he made a mistake and someone got on base, that runner was not getting to second. It was a lot of fun. That Rome pitching staff was a lot of fun. That championship run that they went on was a lot of fun. That was just a really good team. Now, with that success, sometimes this kind of strategy can backfire. We have unfortunately seen it backfire within the Braves organization as is. So, Garrett, can you go ahead and give us an example of where taking away a pitcher's best pitch has actually backfired long term?
Well, if you look at Tukey Toussaint, this was something that started with him with the Diamondbacks, and we knew this when he came over from the Diamondbacks. They weren't letting him throw his curveball. His curveball was his best pitch, similar to Waldrop's. Many considered it one of the better pitches in the minor leagues, a double plus key out pitch, but command issues were a big problem for him. And the Braves tended to take that curveball away from him and did the same thing and said, throw your fastball, throw your changeup. And the problem for Tukey was, and it could be the same problem for Waldrop, is it didn't work. His mechanics never got better. His command never got better. And the secondary pitches, he added a splitter that was okay, but he never really developed the secondary pitches. And by the time he got to the major leagues, his curveball wasn't all that effective because one, his fastball and his changeup, they just weren't good enough to get out. And so players could look for his curveball and know, well, if it's a strikeout situation, he's throwing the curveball. That's all he has. The command of his curveball never really got better. It was a situation where he was making a lot of mistakes as he went up the ladder with his curveball, and the curveball started getting hard. And so we saw regression with this curveball from, pitch that was graded as a 70 in the upper minor leagues to, it was dipping down to a 60, 55 average type pitch as he got up the levels. And, not all of that is necessarily strategy. With pitchers, there's so much variation and there's so many tweaks going on. But he's a guy that, he even had success in the minor leagues. He got to Double A and was utilizing his curveball well, but it never really clicked for Tukey. And so it's just this, it doesn't always work. Some guys, no matter how much you have them throw the fastball, the command just never comes. And Tukey was one of those guys that the command never came. The third pitch never came for him. And unfortunately, Tukey's a guy that we like a lot. As a person, as a player, we love Tukey. We wanted Tukey to succeed. And unfortunately, it never came together for him. And that's the case for a lot of pitchers and a lot of pitching prospects. And, I think that Waldrop's in a similar situation where the command has to come. And I think they're doing the right thing by having him throw the fastball because he has to throw the fastball. He has to have a fastball to succeed. But it is very possible that, like in Toussaint's case, the fastball command never comes. And if it doesn't, what type of pitcher are you looking at? I think that because he has two secondary pitches that can work, even if the fastball command doesn't necessarily develop, and his fastball is better than Tukey's, because his pitches are better than Tukey's, I think regardless, his outcome will be better. But if he gets up to the major leagues with his command, he's going to be walking six, seven guys per nine. And that can't succeed. You can't succeed with that type of walk rate. So if the fastball command never comes for him, you could see him a similar situation where it's just he's great at double A, he's great at triple A, and he just can't quite put it together at the upper levels.
I'm glad you went with Tukey because going back to a comment where I, earlier where I was talking about I'm just afraid of Hurston in a relief role. I still believe that one of the ways that the Braves just didn't put Tukey in the best way to succeed was that changing role. You saw him in a starting pitching role, then he would go to a relief role. He'd be starting pitching, he'd be starting in the minors, then he'd come up and come out of the pen. Like there was just different things that I felt ended up affecting his the way he prepared, the way he went into each game, and could have possibly played a role in just his overall progression. So when I'm thinking about Hurston, those kind of scary thoughts come again, and scary meaning, are we doing him right by having him shift gears entirely and start preparing completely different than what he's accustomed to, what he's been doing this entire year? So I'd like to see him again stay in that starting pitching role. Even if the Braves had, particularly a need at the end of the season, just in my own mind, that's just one of the issues that dates back to what happened with Tukey. So thank you for that, Garrett. Now, you talked about mechanics, and that's the next thing that we want to kind of dig into. Coming into this draft, it was known that walk rate was there, but could it have to do with his overall mechanics? For someone that tall, you got a ton of moving body parts going everywhere all at once in a different bunch of different directions. What are some of the bigger mechanical issues that you've seen from him?
Well, because Waldrop throws with so much effort, there's a lot of inconsistency overall with his delivery. And when it does get bad, one of the things that he was doing, particularly in his last start, was is he would tend to open his upper half too early in his delivery. And he would tend to kind of drop his left, his lead shoulder and kind of pull it back away from him and open up too much. And what that did was is it kind of tilted his shoulders and created and got his arm a little too far away from his body to where he had inconsistencies with his release point, with his arm angle, with his arm path. And so he was tended to miss kind of in that plane of low and in, high and arm side. He would miss low glove side, high arm side consistently with all of his pitches. And so you saw him really struggling to find the zone with that. Then there were times where when he kind of kept his lower body, I mean, his upper body closed throughout the early parts of the delivery and kept his shoulders more firm and a little bit more upright, he would really command the ball well. And then, as the start went on, you could tell he was getting fatigued because he would be really more upright throughout his entire delivery. And then when, at that point, when he was showing fatigue, he kind of just missed everywhere. And so what we're really kind of seeing with him is keeping his body on time is really the first step in the sequence for him. And if he can get that early part of that sequence correct, and he's opening up at the proper times, he's driving with his rear legs at the proper time and following through properly, that arm path becomes more consistent, the release point becomes more consistent, and the fastball, he's able to spot it up in the zone more consistently. He doesn't necessarily, his pitches are so good that he doesn't need to be pinpoint with his command, but he needs to throw competitive pitches. And with his delivery being as violent as it is, it's hard to, he's not a guy that you really project to above average or plus command because there's so many moving parts that it's hard to stay consistent throughout a start. It just, you can't repeat that delivery over and over when you're throwing with that much effort. But when he's able to keep his mechanics in line and really keep his timing right, he's able to command the ball well enough that the slider is away from batters. It's not drifting into the middle of the zone or bouncing in the dirt. He's not spiking his fastball or throwing it above the catcher's head. When he's able to keep it within successful zones, not necessarily pinpoint, but successful zones, his command is good enough and his stuff is good enough to succeed. And it really depends a lot on whether he's finding his arm path and finding his timing.
All that being said, like in totality, I know we're still very, very early into the season, but have you seen any interesting trends that kind of stick out to you? That's something that you want to monitor more, maybe the next start or, for the summer. Is there anything that's really sticking out to you in your overall evaluation for Hurston this year?
If you look at his numbers, you would kind of expect him to struggle against left-handed batters because he's not throwing his splitter, which is primarily your changeup, is primarily what you would use against left-handed batters to get outs. It's kind of the opposite. And again, we're looking at very small samples here, four starts, but he's only struck out 8 of 54 right-handed batters this year. And it kind of goes back to a lot of what I was saying, where he's throwing so many sliders to right-handed batters. And, I tracked those games, and a lot of times it wasn't fastball, slider, fastball, fastball, slider, where he's mixing them. He's throwing four, five, six sliders in a row. And so what you're seeing a lot is after that third slider, guys are going, okay, I know what this looks like. I can hit this. You give a professional hitter enough looks at a pitch, they can figure it out no matter how good the pitch is. So with Waldrop, when he's struggling with both command and with, you don't want to worry much about sequencing in the minor leagues because, again, it's about development, it's not about results. So the sequencing right now isn't necessarily helping him. It's just the Braves are saying, okay, this is the pitch you're throwing, throw it until you get it right. And hitters are able to, and especially, right-handed hitters are getting a lot of looks at his slider, and they're able to really make contact early in the season. And that's really hurting his numbers because they're hitting him hard, and he's being predictable. And I've seen that quite a bit with starters. We saw that a little bit with Spencer Strider as well, where when he was at the AA level, there were a lot of times where they were having him throw six, seven, eight fastballs in a row, and guys figured out how to hit it. And so you see that a lot with the Braves, where they will have guys throw pitches that aren't necessarily ideally sequenced, but the idea is get a feel for how to throw this pitch and get the repetitions back to back to back and kind of develop that way. So what you're seeing with him is he struggled against right-handed batters specifically because he's throwing those sliders so much. And right now, I would say it's his weakest pitch because the command isn't very good of it. So they're able to get pitches that float into the middle of the zone, and they're able to drive them. And he's not really putting away batters very well. But if you look at his overall whiff numbers, they're actually, like, you look at, for example, Owen Murphy, he's striking out, 12, 13 batters per nine, but his whiff rate numbers aren't necessarily any better than Waldrop's. It's just one, Waldrop is getting himself in worse counts. He's not getting so many called strikes, and hitters are seeing so many of his pitches that they're able to kind of key in on them and hit them well.
Yeah, like you said earlier, it's all about progression over results for Hurston. The batting average against, the OPS against might not be the most spectacular, but is he improving? Is that command of that slider to a righty? Is that hitting that outside location? Is he trying to are these things actually working in game scenarios? That is by far the most important thing for Hurston right now, because again, the strategy is in place. The Braves are taking away that splitter and they want him to improve what else he can do with the ball. They want to see better fastball command. And like you said, Garrett, that slider against righties, can he consistently use it if maybe that splitter isn't working one day? So, very important things to watch. That's what we look for when we're watching Hurston Waldrop this year. It's very important to see those progression over the actual results on the ball field. I will note that Hurston's last start, he did have some issues with the landing spot. Some things to monitor might have that landing spot, how that affects his overall presence on the mound. It looked like he had some potential blisters that he might be dealing with. So with Max Fried, that's something you always had to look at. If that next start, if he's going three, if it's that blister. So something to be cognizant of and watch. After each pitch, is he looking at his fingers? Is he trying to rub it? Just things to look at while watching Hurston throughout the summer. All right. Well, that was a lot of information on Hurston. Now we're going to switch gears a little bit and we're going to move on to our first position player of the series. And that's none other than Stone Mountain's very own Kevin Kilpatrick Jr. Now, Kevin was drafted in the 17th round of the 2022 MLB drafts out of the University of Central Florida. He was drafted in his junior year, where he put together a fantastic 184 OPS. He was hitting 383. He was getting on base at a 456 clip, and he was slugging the ball with a 628 slugging percentage. After being drafted, Kevin played across two different levels in his rookie campaign. He started off in the FCL and then over at A Ball in Augusta, where he showed he hit a combined 295, 368, 420. So good for a 788 OPS. And you made it think, okay, maybe, we got something in the 17th round, a potential player that can play all three outfield positions with good speed, a decent arm. Like, okay, maybe the Braves have something cooking. In 2023, he started the season at high A Rome, and that contact skill took a step back. He hit 226. He got on base at a 333 clip and then slugged just 333. So that's unfortunately a very spooky 666 OPS. The good from 2023, he did steal 32 bases while getting caught only 5 times. And that walk rate, again, he hit 226, but was on base at a 333 clip. That came out to a great 12.3 walk rate. But he struggled to find contact and hit just 226 despite a 308 BABIP. So, not a great year in 2023 for Kevin. As a result, he started again this year in Rome, but he's finding that contact yet again. He's hitting 310 through 19 games, but one interesting trend this time is now his walk rate has taken a step back. He's down to 5.5%, again, down from 12.3 from the previous year. It is early. That walk rate tends to stabilize over it's one of the most repeatable metrics for a hitter. Hitter walk rates tend to be the most repeatable stats from the minors to the majors. So the fact that it's fluctuating so much so far, again, hitting 310 through 19 games, he has a pretty solid 840 OPS and 6 stolen bases. He's been successful on the base paths. Now, a little about Kevin coming into the draft, his overall evaluations kind of tend to remain true. He's solid in about everything. He can make solid contact. He doesn't necessarily hit for great power. He gets on base at a good clip. He hits decently. He doesn't really have any true standout tools, but he also doesn't really have any glaring deficiencies either. Now, Garrett, with all that being said, how do you view Kevin as a prospect?
I think Kilpatrick's value is in his speed mostly. He's a fantastic defender in center field, a guy that can play all three positions, who's a plus to even better defender. Like the type of player that you can bring off the bench to steal a lot of bases to make great defensive plays. And so I think he can fit in a fourth outfielder role. I don't see the bat being good enough for him to start. He's athletic enough. He's defensively good enough. It's just he hasn't hit consistently. He's 23 now in A ball, and there's not quite enough power to make up for the lack of contact, and there's not enough contact to make up for the lack of power production. So it's just one of those guys that it's not quite good enough to project into a starter's role, especially in an organization where they have Michael Harris in center field. Like, he's not a better defender than Harris, so he's obviously not going to get that role ever. So for Kilpatrick, it's really looking at what can he do, and there's value in stealing bases and playing defense off of the bench. He hits well enough that I could see him getting to the major leagues. It's just there has to be a lot that goes right for him to get to that level.
We jokingly talked about, a potential player comp, and the more I thought about what you said, the more it really struck with me. He is kind of just a taller Justin Dean. Will he get on base is the question. Once he's on there, he can do anything he wants on the base paths, can play all three defensive outfield positions, has a good arm, can provide value off the bench in the outfield. But the biggest question for both is, can they hit at a consistent level where you're able to give them regular at bats at a major league level? Say, I will agree with you. I don't see that yet. But again, this year he is off to a really good start. You said, a potential fourth outfielder. What kind of timeline do you see associated with Kevin? Are you thinking, 2025, 2026, or later than that?
My hope would be that he gets to double A at some point this year. He is 23. He started off fairly well. He had 120 games at high A last year. So if you look at him at double A, maybe he spends next year in double A, kind of goes level at a time. You could see him maybe 2026, 2027. He's just a guy, he's a project. And the Braves are going to have to take their time. And, it's one of those risky situations where they didn't invest much. There's a major league ceiling there, but there's a pretty high likelihood that he doesn't work out. More than likely, I mean, he's the type of guy that ends up being maybe organizational depth. But I do think that it will take time with him just to get him there. Offensively, he has to refine things with his approach. And so it'd be, for me, at least 2026 before you really saw him in that role. One of the good things with Kilpatrick is he's a very well-liked guy. great in a clubhouse. The organization likes him. And that goes a long way with keeping guys around. You look at Justin Dean, who's another similar player in terms of everyone in the organization loves Dean, and he's been able to stick around in the organization and get opportunities for years based on, his ability to play defense and his ability to be a great clubhouse presence. And I think that Kilpatrick is very similar in that vein that, does he get to the major leagues? Who's really to say? But he's really a guy that you can look at as a great example for younger prospects and a guy that you really want in the organization, regardless of how he performs because of, who he is off the field and in the clubhouse.
Yeah, it's who he is in the clubhouse, that work ethic. When you have all those intangibles, major league organizations will take their time, will give you all the resources that they have to make sure you're able to hit what you're capable of doing. And sometimes it doesn't work out, sometimes it does. You take away those good qualities, and first person that kind of comes to mind that didn't really perform the way he did and had, some negative things said about him was a former first round pick by the Braves, Braxton Davidson. He had all those accolades. They thought highly of him, but then you start hearing stories about how he is in the clubhouse, and the Braves moved on from him pretty quickly despite the money they gave him, the draft grade they gave him. That isn't evident whatsoever with Kevin, from what you hear from players and other people. Like, everyone loves him. He's just a high quality person, and he does have those tools. Like, he's a very toolsy player. If he's able to fix, if he's able to fix and hit consistently, again, you have a player that can play all three defensive outfield positions and play them well while being able to get on base and do well on the base paths. Like, that's value. And they're gonna do whatever they can. If your head's right, they're gonna do whatever they can to try and help you get there. So hopefully, one stop per year and letting him take his time, get comfortable somewhere, get into his own little rhythm will help him potentially hit his ceiling. Too early to say, but again, this year he is off to a good start. He's made, I would say, some good changes to his stance and his swing. Let's dig in a little deeper on Kevin. Garrett, what are some of those more significant changes you've seen from him in his day-to-day at bats now?
Yeah, Kilpatrick had a very, I use this word with Waldrop as well, a very active swing where, especially with his front foot, he'd pick up his front foot, put it back down, then pick it up again to swing. And so there was a lot of timing issues with him, especially last year. And he hit reasonably well, but a lot of it was just he was taking a lot of pitches and getting deep into counts and kind of just hitting line drives. And there wasn't a lot of impact contact with him. What you've seen with him lately is he's really, he's changed his batting stance. And instead of kind of lifting and then dropping back and then lifting back up, he's just dropping into his swing and starting. And, he had a kind of ran into a bit of a hitch in his swing at the end of the year last year. I think that really impacted him in terms of his timing and his ability to make contact. He smoothed a lot of that out this year. It's a more simple, more direct swing. He's not really turning his back to the pitcher as much. And so what you're seeing is just a simple bat to the ball tight swing. And he has the bat speed to make a lot of contact and getting rid of inconsistencies in his bat plane. He tended to drop his right knee, his rear knee too quickly. He would drop his bat head far too quickly in his swing. There were a lot of inconsistencies throughout the year, early and late last year, that he's better this year. He does still have struggles in terms of that bat path through the zone. It can get flat and it can get too long through the zone. So he really needs to work on those things in terms of especially being able to get around on fastballs. But he's definitely made a lot of changes to simplify that swing and not have as many moving parts that were really causing him issues in terms of getting to pitches consistently, especially in the inner half. Last year, he really struggled to do anything with inner half fastballs. He couldn't really drive them. It was more he was trying to fight them off, trying to just get them to the outfield. And this year, he's not doing as much of that because he's able to get inside of and get around on those fastballs more consistently. And so that's where a lot of what you're seeing in the changes is just getting his bat into and through the zone more quickly.
From all these changes, are there any noticeable trends that you're going to be, kind of monitoring moving forward?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just in his approach at the plate. One, compare, if you compare his swings early in the year last year to late in the year last year, he started swinging harder. And for a guy that has struggled hitting for power, the Braves are willing to, and they've shown this really at every level, even at the major league level, they're willing to sacrifice some contact for you to drive the ball. And Kilpatrick, that's was the next step for him, is being able to drive the ball. We've seen this isolated power go up over 50 points this year. That's a huge step for him, and he's hitting the ball harder, more consistently. It's a lot more ground balls, fewer line drives at this point. He's making, he's working through those adjustments, but he's swinging harder. And especially we talked about the drop in walk rate. Specifically, what you're seeing is a lot of times last year he'd take first pitches. He would get two, three pitches into an at bat before he would really look to attack anything. And sometimes he would be on the defensive at that point. At that point, he's whatever fastball comes in the zone, he has to hit that. If they throw a curveball at him, he has to swing at that. And it impacted what he was able to drive. This year, we've seen the drop off in walks because he's coming in there. And if you're throwing him a fastball in a good spot early in the zone, he's driving more with his hips. He's driving, instead of trying to create, lift and power with his upper body, he's utilizing more of his whole body. He's stiffer with his front leg, and he's really driving through with his hips to try to attack the ball and hit the ball hard. So what you're seeing a lot early in the season is attacking fastballs early in the count. I think the problem with that is he hasn't quite worked out which fastballs to attack. So a lot of times fastball gets away from him, and he drives through and then kind of pokes it to right field. So you're seeing a lot of opposite field hits for him, a lot of ground balls, rolling over a lot of pitches early because he's still working on kind of those changes to approach in terms of being more aggressive early in the count. But in order to drive the ball more consistently, he has to hit fastballs better than he did last year, and he's doing that. With that, he has struggled some with curveballs this year. I think that's been really the biggest swing and miss for him, is he's getting beat by secondary pitches a little bit too much. So he's definitely working through things with his overall approach at the plate. They're making changes to get him to drive the ball more. And now he kind of, maybe he's gone a little bit too far in terms of what he's attacking, and kind of has to dial it back a little bit to get the walk rate back up. Because, really one of his biggest positives is he has a good feel for the zone. His contact has taken a little bit of a step back in the zone, but he is swinging. He's not necessarily chasing pitches. It's just he's swinging a little bit too much at fastballs that aren't necessarily ideal pitches to swing at. Kind of finding that balance is the real next step for him. But I like that he's really smoothed over the swing more, and he's really attacking and looking to drive fastballs. And that hopefully will take him to the next level. Like I said, we've seen a huge increase in his power production so far this season. A slight drop off in strikeouts, and I think a lot of that is just, one, he's not getting as deep into counts, and two, he's not reacting to what the pitcher gives him. He's going and getting what he wants. That's going to make a huge difference for him, and I like seeing that aggression from him at the plate. It's just a matter of, again, finding that balance of he does need to take walks to maximize his value because he's not an elite bat to ball guy. He gets his bat to the ball enough, but it's not at an elite rate. It's not at a rate like a Nacho Alvarez, where anything in the zone, he can hit a line drive. Kilpatrick has to be selective with his pitches in order to drive the ball consistently and hit hard line drives. And we've seen some of that this year, and some of going a little bit too far in the other direction and hitting a little bit too many of the pitches. So far, there's definitely a lot of active changes, and he needs to find balance.
All you're telling me is Kevin has changed everything about what he does on the offensive side.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a bit different.
and he's done it to an 840 OPS through 19 games. I would say that's a pretty wildly successful start to the season, all things considered for Kevin. Thanks for that, Garrett. That was a lot. We did a deep dive on Hurston Waldrep. We gave a little more background information and what we see from players, what we monitor, what we, things that we want to examine throughout the entire season. That wraps us up for episode two. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us, and we hope you join us again next week. Thanks, everybody.